Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Man, I tell you what, I've been a little spoiled this week. I mean, it's been a lot of work this week, but I tell you what, getting a chance to travel all across the great state of Montana, getting to connect with so many of our listeners and just go to diners and cafes and Army Navy stores, it's just been absolutely incredible. But I've been a little spoiled because I've gotten the chance to hang out with retired Border Patrol Chief Chris Clem. I've gotten a chance to hear him speak at each one of these border security rallies and the final border security rally taking place this afternoon in Billings, Montana, 4:30, I believe, at the Northern Hotel. But I'm glad we're back in studio today because I want you to get a chance, if you haven't gotten to yet, I want you to get a chance to catch up with Chief Clem. I want you to get a chance to ask him a quick question. If you got a quick question or if you got a quick comment when it comes to the topic of border security, he's now with us here in studio. Chief, great to see you, and what an honor getting a chance to hang out with you this week.
The honor has been all mine. It's been a great week. We're culminating here this afternoon, but really just awesome to be able to spend some time with you this morning and talk about what we've, you know, what's going on at the border, talk about some of the stories that were told last night, and then kind of recap what we've done. I mean, really, it's been an honor. Weathers was great. Like I mentioned, I've had a few very quick stops over the last decade, but really kind of this was 40 years ago when I was in this part of the country, and so I kind of got to see some things that I hadn't seen in such a long time.
Well, real quickly before we go to our first break here, Tim and Savage said, man, I would love to hear the Chief's take on the debate last night. I got to hear it because we were listening to it in the car on the drive over, and how many times did the word border come up? It came up a lot last night.
Yeah, it did. And, there was the president was misleading folks like he typically did. And President Trump was reminding folks about, you know, how things were and how bad they've gotten. I will tell you that I don't know or could verify the numbers that President Trump was throwing out there. But I can tell you that we've had, in 2021, there was over 1.66 million arrests. It went up to 2 million arrests, went to 2.2 million arrests, and we're already over 1.7 million arrests. So when you do that, it at least been 8 million people that have come across, plus the gotaways under this administration alone. So there's probably close to 9 or 10 million just under the Biden administration that Border Patrol's had to deal with. So I was glad it was a topic because it is no longer a border issue. It is an American issue. It's national security. It's public safety. So I'm glad it took a lot of the time of that debate.
Well, and one point you made so very well all week long is that historically this has also been a bipartisan issue, both parties trying to work to secure our border, trying to wrangle over who is working harder. And so what a dramatic departure we have seen because of the policies of Joe Biden and John Tester, just flinging the gates completely wide open, known suspected terrorists not only coming across our southern border, we had bigger numbers on our northern border here in recent months. Okay, do you have a quick question or a comment? Do you want to jump in on the conversation with retired Border Patrol Chief Chris Clem on the ground in Montana? Give us a call right now, 406-294-0970. We'll start the lightning round next.
Taking your calls live, 406-294-0970. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Yeah, if you got a quick question, I say again, if you got a quick question or a comment, give us a call, 294-0970, because I know people want to hear more from Border Patrol Chief Chris Clem, retired chief, who's here on the ground all week long here in Montana. Let's start with one of your phone calls, Mike in Bozeman. What do you got for us? Thanks for the call.
Last night, Trump was asked directly about mass deportation and how he's going to handle it, and he didn't answer the question, but he has addressed it some in the past, and it was based on Eisenhower's actions doing a mass deportation quite some time ago. I have thought about this a lot. There's going to be so dang many people involved in getting out of this country, and a lot of them have some sort of connection to people already here.
So how do you do it? How do you do it? How do you eat an elephant one bite at a time, right, Chief?
Yeah, one bite at a time. Look, the caller asked or mentioned, it's going to be a logistical nightmare, and we actually have to, you know, really take a step back and look at the reasonableness in this. And I think we do a good strategy and we prioritize. We go after really that criminal element, the convicted felons, that, you know, those that are wanted, those that have existing orders of a removal from a judge. You know, those are no-brainers, and that should be that. And believe me, if there is Democrats that aren't looking forward or supporting rounding up felons and convicted felons and people with warrants, shame on them. So I think we go after that first. Then we look at the ones that have been paroled in, you know, under this big parole program, I think that is going to ultimately be ruled unlawful, because the executive branch can start that date and they can end that date. So you can end that and we can help, you know, kind of facilitate their removal. There's so many people in this country that have been domiciled it's going to be difficult to remove them. And we also, you know, whether people agree with it or not, when you step foot in the U.S., you are under the Constitution. So you have the rights just like anybody else. And these folks that have been processed and placed in removal proceedings, the 7.4 million that we know are on the non-detained docket, they're entitled to due process. So unless they voluntarily just drop their case altogether, it's going to be difficult and it's going to take time. Can it be done? Yes. Is it going to be a challenge? Yes. Should we find some reasonableness? Absolutely. Let's target the highest threats first. Criminal aliens, those that have existing orders of removal. I think that's a good chunk. It also sends a message that we mean business. And you combine that with securing the border and fixing up some of the immigration backlog, I think we can start shaping this into a lot more palatable place for the American people.
That will have a deterrence effect. This question came up first Monday night, actually, from an audience question in Missoula. And I think you had some specific numbers of just how big that criminal element is that's already on a list that they're allowing to just keep here. And you also referenced an operation by President Eisenhower that shows that this can be done.
Yeah, no, it definitely can be done. And we've polled, right? We've done the polling that over 60% of the American public agree with these type of deportation operations. And I think it will even get even more support when you narrow that scope to prioritize against those really bad actors. I just think that, you know, that will be something that everybody can get behind. It's not going to be done in a day. Just like you said, how do you eat an apple one or an elephant one bite at a time?
All right. Let's go next. A quick question or comment. Kyle and Kyla, thanks for your call.
Yes, sir. Well, with all due respect, sir, I feel that even the things you just said, because my question was along the same lines, even with the things you just said, dealing with the liberal courts that we have in this country, trying to get those people out of here and granting them constitutional protections, you have already collapsed your argument for being able to accomplish what you say you can accomplish before you even start.
So how do you go around the courts then, I guess, is probably the comment there, right? How could Trump go around the courts if he's back, if you have liberal judges that try to block these deportations that are returned?
Well, if there's an order of removal, there's no appeal. It's already been done. So there is that population. And I agree, right? That has been the hangup, because here's what's been happening. Congress has not been passing some of the legislation they need to do, so the executive branch ends up executing. Well, then people in these very liberal districts start doing lawsuits, and then the judicial branches end up shutting it down. So the caller's right? We're going to have these challenges. But the only way we're going to be able to make any difference, because I don't believe in just give it up, right? So we got to fight. So we go with the ones that we know that we have the courts backing. There is an order of removal signed, sealed by the judge. That person does not get an appeal on that. They've already wasted those. That's good. The due process piece, again, that's a challenge. We're not going to be able to get over that. There's no way around that. If they voluntarily depart, that's another option. But again, we have to look at this strictly from a strategic piece.
what can we accomplish? And we can go after the ones that have the immediate, that already have the removal orders in place.
That's right. And to Kyle and Kyla's point, he's right about the courts. That's why right now, Senator John Tester, who has been in full support of Joe Biden's open border policies, John Tester is trying to sneak a liberal federal judge, trying to pack a liberal federal judge on the bench before the November elections. And it goes back to that very point, what the chief talked about here. The House has passed strong border legislation. It's been blocked in the Senate by one vote, John Tester's vote. And then John Tester wants to put these radical left-wing judges on the bench that will do everything that Kyle just said they will try to do. Chief, Joe Biden said the Border Patrol endorsed him.
Well, no, they didn't. But we can talk about that after the break, because I think the audience deserves complete clarification on what they did and did not do.
Yeah, that's a great point. It was a little growlier when I heard it in the car last night, the immediate reaction.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana, statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, this is an important response here. So, that topic was brought up, you know, in the debate last night. Joe Biden claimed that the Border Patrol endorsed him. Now, I think we all know what he was trying to say, but even if he said it the right way, the way that his handlers wanted him to say it, that is still not accurate. Before we get to our next caller on the phone lines, Chief, yeah, clear up the mud here for us.
Yeah, so first of all, a federal agency does not get involved in politics. That was not the Border Patrol that did any endorsement, whether it was endorsing President Trump or Biden. It was the Border Patrol Union, okay, and they're allowed to get into the politics. So the Border Patrol Union had previously endorsed President Trump when he was running for president and reelection. What they did is they had initially backed the bipartisan, or at least the alleged bipartisan Senate bill, right?
I like that, alleged.
Yeah,
yes.
So, yeah, because it was very partisan.
And a train wreck.
Exactly. It did nothing for border security. What they did is the Border Patrol Union backed that bill initially, and when it was going to be dead on arrival, they kind of pulled it back. But the president, I think, was trying to say, I had a plan with that Senate bill, and the Border Patrol backed it. Again, he misrepresented that completely, and we saw quickly how the union, you know, put something out pretty quick that they'd never endorse Biden and will not.
And not only that, yeah, and Ryan Malta sent me that message. Yeah, the Border Patrol came out minutes after Biden said that they had supported him and said they had not. They never will. Yeah. Not ever. Yeah. You know, how much more clear do we have to be here? But also, yeah, I mean, when it came to the Border Patrol Council, they quickly started backtracking any support for even that bill in the Senate, because they started to realize what a train wreck and how it actually would have made the border crisis even worse.
Yeah, the House bill that has been sitting on Schumer's inbox for 432 days, H.R. 2, was actually a border security bill, because the basic tenets were about, you know, securing the border, providing the amount of agents, the policies to back it up. That Senate bill, the only thing that I found that was positive was increasing the capacity for detention for ICE immigration enforcement removal operations. But even that was just bringing it back to the level that they started with under at the end of the Trump administration, beginning of the Biden administration. Honestly, Biden and his administration and the secretary, if they had done absolutely nothing and left everything in place, we'd be so much better off.
Yeah, that's right. We're taking quick calls for several reasons. One, because the time goes by fast. Two, because we've got Louisiana Senator John Kennedy coming to Montana. He's going to be with us here in about 10 minutes. And there's a lot of people that want to interact with Chief Clem. Next up on the phone lines, taking them as we get them here, former Montana Congressman Denny Reberg. Denny, great to hear from you.
Great to listen to your program. I was in El Paso 4 weeks ago with Austin Knutson, our Attorney General, and I can tell you stories of watching the migrants coming down the mountain, getting ready to put on their camouflage to try and sneak across the border. I saw it personally.
Yeah.
It's a mess. It's a mess. And the Border Patrol people were so supportive of our attempting to try and control the border. I can't speak to the union. I couldn't care less. But the Border Patrol officers that handed me the binoculars to watch people move down the mountain were saying, we're screwed.
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy. Denny, great to hear from you. But, and if I could kind of turn that also into a question here, Chief Clem, why do people feel like they have to sneak across right now? They're not blocking you. They're releasing you into the country and giving you a whole bunch of taxpayer money. So why do people still feel the need to sneak across?
Yeah, because they're not up to any good. They're not here to do the right thing. They're not trying to follow the law. They're not trying to better themselves. Because you're right, under this administration, you know, when we're basically catching and releasing you, why would you try to evade Border Patrol? Why would you try to sneak in? But I can tell you, I spent a lot of my career in El Paso. Before I became chief in Yuma, I was the number two, the deputy chief there for El Paso, which covered West Texas, all of New Mexico. I know those mountains where they were taking them, because that's where we sent a lot of people to go see the truth. And, you know, that's part of that camouflage piece is really kind of part of the package when you pay to cross. I mean, they are doing that purposely. We have caught migrants, you know, all across the border, you know, in those camouflage outfits. I mean, somebody's got the boon on the market there of camouflage in Mexico, because so many of them come across that way just to blend in. And again, the cartel controls everything. It's a transnational criminal organization. We've talked about it this week. It's Fortune 500 company because it is a business model for them. And they will allow and send, you know, what we call give ups, hundreds of give ups at a time into one area. Then they're going to sneak those camouflage people across. Those are going to be your gang members, your drug runners, you know, your convicted felons. And, you know, again, just like I want to make sure everybody understands, this is why I say it's a public safety and national security issue when it comes down to border security. What were those people up to that they were in camouflage trying to sneak in to evade apprehension? They're up to no good. And we're seeing that kind of no good play out all across the country. I mean, we don't go more than a week with some heinous crime being committed by somebody who snuck in or who was arrested, caught, and released under this administration, hurting, harming, and killing American citizens. And, you know, we've got to get it right. And I'm glad the representative mentioned, because, you know, we do want their support. And your audience needs to recognize that this is, and I think they do, because I've talked to them throughout the week, that this is a public safety, national security issue. Stop getting emotionally connected to an immigration issue. Yes, we have one, but it starts with keeping America safe. And I think that's the approach. That's who you have to be looking at. When you go to vote this November, you have got to be looking at somebody who's putting your safety, your security at their best interest. That's the government's job. Anything less is a betrayal.
That's right. That's right. You talk about them being outfitted with camouflage. It's like the drug. When I went to Fort Benning, Georgia, as a newly enlisted private, one of the first trips you take is, all right, we're going to send you to CIF, Central Issuing Facility, and you got your shopping cart and you fill it with all your camo gear and your rucksack and everything. It's like the cartels have their own CIF, their own SIF on the southern border, sending the getaways across. Chief, real quick, there was a point, you only mentioned this once, I think, this week, but it was really interesting to me. You said there's a percentage of drugs like fentanyl that come through the official ports of entry. But then I think you had a specific number about the drugs that come within those official ports of entry.
Right. So when we were talking about fentanyl, specifically in the state of Arizona, which ends up being the number one corridor, it's my home state, so I'm pretty in tune to the most recent stats from last year. 52% of the seizures of fentanyl occurred at the port of entry throughout Arizona. And that meant 48% were outside the port of entry. It was either seized by Border Patrol or state and local law enforcement.
You know, that's a problem. And we're seeing, you know, fentanyl poisoning and happening every day across this country. You know, I think the number is 300, an average of 300 deaths a day related to opioid and fentanyl, either opioid overdose or fentanyl poisoning. There's numbers out there that DEA has said that the black market pills that are out there that people are getting from, you know, underground and from online, 7 out of 10 of those have some kind of deadly dose or trace or fentanyl in it, because these clandestine labs that are producing this, you know, the raw precursors and some of the powder is coming in from China, getting into Mexico, getting into labs, they're pressing them into pills and smuggling them in. And they're not using FDA standards, so they may press a legitimate Percocet, you know, that they're doing from an underground perspective, but it's got fentanyl in it. So somebody orders something and they end up dying.
And I raise that question because we have one of our more liberal callers out of Great Falls in the past who said, well, we just need more technology at our ports of entry. Yeah, that's nice, too. Let's get that, too. But that's not. We need a whole bunch more. Only a couple minutes to go here. Grandpa Lou in Billings. First off, go to SecureBorderSecureMontana.com or just show up at the Northern Hotel at 4:30 this afternoon. That's how you can get in to see Chief Clem. Did you have a quick question, Grandpa Lou?
Oh, I just wanted to thank you and everybody that has served. And please remember all our troops deployed. And as far as the debate last night and stuff, boy, Corn Pop sure had a bad night. And you can tell that everything the Democrats that Brandon talked about was a lie. And everything that they stand for is just plain evil.
All right, we got to hold it right there. We're just about out of time. Chief Clem, about a minute and a half to go. Man, even when we do these border security laws, we still never cover it all, do we?
No, there's just so much, right? I mean, because the border is dynamic, it's fluid. As long as there are threats around the world that it poses threats to the United States, we're going to have to make sure that we're securing our border, that we're supporting our Border Patrol agents, supporting our local border communities, to include the leadership down there. You know, it's been just a complete disaster. It's been chaos. Yeah, we've had a little lull in the action, but that's kind of a political football that's still in the fourth quarter. But the numbers are still going to be a record compared to, you know, the previous 25, 30 years. You know, again, and we've been talking about the southern border because that's where the volume is. It is the numbers up here, the northern border are minuscule compared to what we see in the south. But that does not mean we're any less vulnerable up here. You've got threats across around the world, and Canada is no different. And we've got to make sure that once we get a better wrangle on the southern border, we start addressing the northern border too, because people just do the end around and try to come in through Canada. So we've got it is about national security, it's about public safety. So thank you, Aaron, for the opportunities this week and today.
Thank you, Chief, and thanks for your years of sacrifice. Thank your wife for us too, and your kids for their sacrifice throughout those years of service. Oftentimes the families get forgotten, and they're a part of this sacrifice big time. Chief, stick around, because I'm supposed to have Louisiana Senator John Kennedy next, but you never know, schedules may change last minute.
This is where Montana Talks Ag with Lane Nordlund.
A grazing management workshop is scheduled to take place July 10th in Big Timber, focused on riparian grazing management. The July 10th event will feature guest speaker Nate Haygood with NRCS out of Bozeman and tour of a Ranching for Rivers off-stream watering project on the Stenberg Ranch. The event is a collaborative effort between the Rangeland Resources Program and the Montana Association of Conservation Districts. Cost of registration is $25 per person, including the tour presentation and lunch. More information can be found at macdnet.org.
Join the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. NCBA is the oldest and largest national cattle industry organization working to defend your interests in Washington, D.C. And there are big benefits to being a member. You get news you can use in the National Cattlemen, email updates in the NCBA Beef Bulletin, plus big discounts only for NCBA members. Join by calling 866-233-3872 or online at ncba.org.
The Montana Grain Growers has announced the hiring of Kara Berkland as their Director of Policy. The Grain Growers say that Kara will solely focus on policy and regulatory issues that Montana farmers are experiencing. Berkland was born and raised in Great Falls and has a background and experience in the Utah legislature. I'm Lane.
This
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we do have Louisiana Senator Kennedy with us on the phone lines. I'm going to do a quick 30 seconds because Cuesta in Cardwell has something very important to share with regard to this border security debate. This is going to be one of the most important 30-second pieces of audio on the show this week. Cuesta, what do you want to share about border security?
Well, I want to share that in 1985, I went to boarding school in El Paso, and my eyes were opened as a small Montana girl. My dad had just had some ultimate wisdom to send me down there for a year, and I came back and I tried to tell people that the border is a very scary place, and being a border on a border town and having border problems are not something you want in your community. Well, now I'm seeing it in small town Montana. We have several illegals that live in Three Forks, Montana, and it's terrifying. I have a 13-year-old, and I can't have the relaxation of letting him walk from his baseball practice to the grocery store because I don't know. These guys have been committing all kinds of petty crimes.
Yeah.
They're up all weird hours of the day looking in people's houses. I mean, they're not bringing their finest.
People don't know what a massive change is waiting for them. No, I actually had a guy approach me after Chief Clem's talk last night, and he said that. He said, Aaron, Montanans don't know what they got coming for them with this illegal immigrant invasion. He said, I was down on the southern border. I live in one of these communities. He says, your kids will not even be able to walk down the street. They won't feel safe. Just your daughters won't be able to just walk down the street. It's powerful stuff what she just said right there. She's already seeing it. Senator Kennedy, man, I tell you what, this is one of my favorite senators. Whenever he's on TV, I gotta turn it on. I gotta go watch one of the highlight reels because he's one of the wittiest, one of the smartest people serving back in Congress right now. And Senator Kennedy, I understand you're going to be in Montana this weekend.
I am here right now, Mr. Flint. Thank you for having me. I love Montana. I'm never leaving, man. This is America.
That it is. God's country.
I came out a day early and did a little trout fishing. I love to fly fish. I fly fish back home a lot in Louisiana. I think I can say this on the radio. Our fish in Louisiana are kind of dumbasses. You know, you can get them to hit your fly three or four times. These trout are smart, man.
That's why you got to take a good guide with you. That's great to hear. I'm glad you're getting to enjoy Montana. You know, I was thinking about it. We've had some callers call in about the presidential debate last night between Joe Biden and Donald J. Trump. And I was just thinking, I was like, man, I haven't seen reaction from Senator Kennedy yet. Did you get a chance to watch it? Did you get a chance to hear it at all, or at least see some of the highlights?
Well, I saw it. I saw what you saw. How can I put this? For President Biden, it was outside the scope of reasonable expectations. I put it that way. Back in Louisiana, we would call it a cluster event. I don't know how he recovers from this. I just don't. And people will be talking about the debate for days, for weeks, probably for months. Some of the commentators are going to try to convince the American people that they didn't see what they saw, but everybody saw it. And I don't hate anyone. I certainly don't hate President Biden, but if he were my father, I'd take away his car keys. And it's just sad, but it is what it is.
What?
I'm out here in Montana to try to help my friend Tim Sheehy become a United States Senator. The guy's a rock star. We need him in the Senate. We don't just need his vote. We need his big brain. And we need his entrepreneurial spirit.
I hear you there. I got to know Tim Sheehy and his wife when they first got out of the military and started these now incredibly successful businesses here in Montana. And I was thinking about this last night, too. Okay, because now CNN, MSNBC, a lot of Democrats are now, they're trying to get Biden kicked off the ticket. They're trying to replace him as the Democrat presidential candidate. It's like, okay, even if we replace Biden, we haven't replaced the people that are actually running his administration. They'll still be in charge. And if we don't replace liberal Senator John Tester, he's just as responsible for these failures right now as Joe Biden is, because he's been with him every step of the way.
Well, if great question, Aaron. If the Democrats replace President Biden, the obvious next person up is Vice President Harris. And I know the Vice President. I served in the United States Senate with her. We sat on the Judiciary Committee together. Let me say it again. I don't hate anyone, but if you talk to the American people, They don't have a lot of confidence in the vice president's ability to be an effective president either. In the minds of many Americans, how can I put this? When the vice president's IQ gets to 75, she ought to sell. That's not me saying that. I think that's what the American people think about her, fair or unfair. So it was not a good night for the president. It was pretty much a goat rodeo.
You said you'd take away the car keys from him if you had the power. I joked with a lady earlier. I had a lady out of Billings call me, and she said, "I can't believe that they're doing this to him at this state of where Joe Biden is at right now." And I had to joke, because she said, "I can't believe Jill Biden is doing this and allowing this to happen to her husband." And I joked. I said, "Heck, my wife won't even let me leave the house until I, you know, in flip flops until I trim my nasty toenails."
Well, I hope too, Aaron, that we don't lose sight in this discussion about the policies of the Biden administration. We've all lived through it. As I say, I do not hate anyone. When I say my prayers at night, one of the things I ask my God for is, don't let me hate. But the truth of the matter is, being as objective as I can, the Biden administration has sucked. I mean, President Biden, just think about it. He has mismanaged Congress. He's mismanaged COVID. He's mismanaged the economy. He's mismanaged inflation. He's mismanaged regulations. He's mismanaged the border. He mismanaged Afghanistan. He's mismanaged the war in Gaza and the war in Ukraine. His appointees to the federal bench are from the loon wing of his party. I mean, it's just, he's been a great disappointment. If you put President Biden in charge of the Sahara Desert, he'd run out of sand. And, you know, it doesn't give me any joy to say that. But the American people are spending more to live worse. And as best I can tell, the only people who are better off today in America than they were 4 years ago are illegal immigrants. And we need better. And we need help in the Senate. Tim Sheehy, this guy, I mean, say it again, he's a beast. He's a rock star. He's a war hero. He's a successful entrepreneur. Now, some of his enemies are attacking him because he's been so successful. In the America I grew up in, we applauded success. We didn't try to denigrate it. But I'm out here to help him, and he's going to be a great U.S. senator. And I hope that folks will vote for him.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I was coming back from a monument dedication in the Washington, D.C. area about 3 weeks ago or so, and I ran into Chuck Schumer by chance coming off an airplane. And Boy, Chuck Schumer and John Tester, those two are tight. Because I told Chuck Schumer, I said, hey, you're going to get defeated. John Tester is going to get defeated in Montana this November. And boy, Chuck Schumer whipped around at me and gave me the evil eye. And then he was yelling back at me like 50 feet down the terminal. He said, your candidate's crazy. I'm like, he's a Navy SEAL veteran with a Bronze Star for Valor and a Purple Heart. Like, and this is the guy that they are trashing. It's like, wow, what, just a disrespect for those who've served and sacrificed that you can see blatantly coming from these guys.
Tim Sheehy will be a great senator. I mean, I'm just telling you. He'll be a great senator. And you'll hear a lot of commentary, Aaron, over the next few months, as you've heard already, about, well, the Republicans have to take back the majority and counting the number of votes and that sort of thing. This is more important and beyond the number of votes. Tim Sheehy's just a good, good man. He loves his country. He's been successful in this country. He loves Montana. He's tough as a pine knot. He's a good, good U.S. Senator.
Senator John Kennedy, we got to take a quick break. Can you stick with us for a few more minutes?
Absolutely, man.
All right. Sounds good. Sounds good. Yeah, Senator John Kennedy already on the ground in Montana. That name's got a nice ring to it, doesn't it, here? But big news out of the United States Supreme Court regarding a J6 case. I think the senator's already been tracking this news. I'll get his take on that and much more in 2 minutes. Shortest break of the hour.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, great to have Senator John Kennedy out of Louisiana on with us while he's on the ground in Montana. Senator, I think, are you speaking? There's a Montana GOP platform convention in Billings this weekend. Did I hear you're going to be speaking at that, or you probably got a few events, I'd imagine, while you're in town?
Yes, I'm in Bozeman right now. I'm headed over to Billings as soon as we finish visiting. And I've got to give a round table and some speeches. And I think my friend Steve Daines is going to be there, and Tim's going to be there, and we're going to have a good time.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. Well, you're in God's country, and you're in good hands. Before I get to
I love this place, man. I'm never leaving Montana. I like it here.
That's why I'm here. Every time I'd come home from Iraq or Afghanistan, I think I'd go try to take some bigger job, more money elsewhere, and it's like, why? Why would I want to live anywhere else?
We were out on the Upper Madison fishing and catching a few trout and watching the bald eagles, and I'm just thinking, man, this is I could get used to this.
I did the same, in the area, different fishing spots. I was volunteering with Warriors in Quiet Waters with some of our post 9/11 veterans, and I was volunteering, but man, I felt like I was the one on the trip. It was just so incredible being out there, and it was weather just like this that we got right now. And I'm taking the pontoon out tomorrow. I've been out traveling the state all week. I got to get the kids out on the pontoon. So
good for you, man.
You got to have priorities. Doesn't matter what's going on in the world. You got to have your priorities, don't you?
Amen.
But before I get your take, I know we've only got about 4.5 minutes left here.
Okay.
Talking policies, you've been holding these left-wing judicial nominees accountable. I mean, that Biden and Tester have been pushing, have been supporting, especially when it comes to this radical transgender agenda, especially when it comes to child predators and their soft on crime. To me, that's worth a point worth making here, because even if they replace Joe Biden, well, John Tester voted to allow men into girls' locker rooms. So even if you get rid of Joe Biden, you've still got people like John Tester there pushing these same crazy policies.
Well, President Biden, he has nominated to the federal bench people who are activists who happen to have law degrees. They are from the loon wing of the president's Democratic Party. They want to rewrite the Constitution every other Thursday to advance some social or economic agenda that they can't get by the voters. They just think federal judges ought to be politicians in robes. That's not what I want. I don't care, what your politics are, but you got to leave them at the courthouse door. A federal judge is supposed to tell us what the law is, not what he or she thinks the law ought to be. That's the role of Congress. And President Biden has, and look, I try to ask tough questions, find out what they, what planet they just parachuted in from, because some of them don't seem to live on planet Earth, certainly not country America. And I've been pretty vocal. I try not to be mean-spirited, but these people are appointed errand for life. They're unelected. They have a breathtaking amount of power. And you don't want people on the federal bench like that.
A couple minutes to go here with Senator John Kennedy, and just listening to him, I think, man, there's a previous John Kennedy who probably has more in common with this John Kennedy than the modern-day Democrat Party on a whole host of things. But like I say,
I'm not related to the Kennedy, the Massachusetts Kennedy family that I know of. But if I am, I'm from the poor side of the family. I want to make it clear.
That's right. That's right. The catfishing side of the family instead of the sailing side. Yeah. Supreme Court, two big announcements just came out of the U.S. Supreme Court. There was a major victory for cities that want to crack down on transients. So that's good news for some cities here in Montana. But a J6 case with about a minute to go. What did the Supreme Court say on this January 6th case, and what's your reaction?
This is what the Supreme Court said. After the Enron scandal in 2002, Congress passed a law called the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. It had to do with fraud and financial accounting. We created a crime called obstruction of official proceeding. The Justice Department tried to weaponize that law, and they tried to apply it to what happened on January 6th. And the United States Supreme Court correctly said to the Justice Department, you cannot take a law that was passed to deal with financial fraud and obstruction of official proceeding and weaponize it and apply it to what happened to January 6th. You have to follow the will of Congress. And that, in a nutshell, is what it was. Once again, the Justice Department tried to take a statute that had nothing to do with the situation, weaponize it, use it for, well, I won't speak for what's in their heart because I don't know, but you got to follow the law. And they didn't, and the Supreme Court said we're striking it down, and they were correct.
All right. Well, Senator Kennedy, it's been an honor having you on the show. Hope you get to enjoy some more fishing, and hope to run into you while you're here in Montana. Thanks again for your time. Great to have you.
Thank you, Ann. Thanks for having me, man.
All right. Appreciate it. Man, get the pontoon ready. Here we go.